This feature has been brought to you by Slot Foundation, which needs your support to continue projects like these. Information on this recording and access to other recordings is available online at slot.org.
No one wants to die, the Dalai Lama once said. And the great thinking writer Kenneth Burke tried not to sleep, but only to doze because he feared not waking. Is death primordial? If there is a before death is, then it must be always already there to get to. Because in our unintegrated logologic, death is an add-on. Inside, from childhood and first thinking, we may feel that death cannot be. I cannot imagine me dead, if by dead I mean not being. Where does my mind go when I imagine me dead? It only hides like a voyeur. Death is an unimaginable extra. Even God said so, since death, the latecomer, is the consequence of a transgression, punishment for violation of a taboo against the consumption that knows. From the first taboo is the first last death. So, how to grant us amnesty and get back to pre-mortifying?
That dog is at least one half not dog.
Arakawa and Gens want us to talk through what human beings may not yet be ready to think. That doesn't scare us. We're poets. And that's basically what we intend to be doing all day long, even when we can't. What scares us is when we can't. Because then we're trapped like everyone else in the human condition, and who knows, maybe we'll follow the deathly line of least resistance and lash out in frustration and despair and invade another country, as if to ward off dying. Dick Cheney acts as though he's immortal. So?
My hat had vanished. When that cat that sat up looked straight at it, that hat had had it.
Speaking does not want to follow a line of thought. Straight lines only point in two directions, toward oneself, like Narcissus, and toward death, like Narcissus. Mirrors do the dying before us. They destine us. But twinning twines and twirls our tongues to turn us over. Mind first, then comes what Blake called the bounding line, the line that bounds in bounding.
Which comes first, mouth or house? Things are pawns of space. Kings are pawns that ate the space that made them. Mind your mouth. Shut your house.
Walking there is waking here.
Everything that seems must seem to be.
Being is licit. Arakawa and Gens are not conceptual artists, but principle artists. Concepts are just what they say and do. Principles are already there and are never done. Arakawa and Gens offer a language for cognitive reorientation with the aim of reaching through to an undefined and perhaps undefinable underexistence that somehow may be intrinsically free of destiny. Like all languages, and especially languages grounded in a poetics, it must be learned. But it can't be, at least not fully, because it doesn't know itself, since by definition and by design it is incomplete, in formation, provisional. Like a poetics, it must be known in process, much as the body is known, but not as a so-called body of knowledge. So we are inevitably co-conspirators, co-inspirators, and inevitably our knowing is only half coherent. And so we are here as co-inquirers. We have nothing to lose but our certainties, nothing to gain but our questions, if we may paraphrase the liminal Gertrude Stein, whose alleged last words began, "What is the answer?" followed by, "Well, then what is the question?"
Everything that seems must seem to be.
being is licit. Death, thou shalt not die. Thou shalt die, said John Donne. Can we defeat death as an object? That puts death straight before us. Is that idolatry? World as object? We would only dare do that if God were straight behind us. But don't look back, someone might be gaining on you. John Donne had the spirit of defiance born of resolute faith, and yet his rhetorical strategy was to turn death on itself. He had faith in language. In what sense do we? Is language linked inside to a sense, an organ of perception, apperception, which, if it were to awaken to its innate potential, would speak beyond and behind itself and unravel destiny?
Thinking destiny thinks the end of a story. Does thinking reversible destiny mean thinking the beginning of one? Or the way back from a destiny underway? Is destiny underway? To take back destiny would perhaps be to open the field vacated by the withdrawal of the function destiny, soluble destiny. Destiny was the monster that stood in wait when gods were removed from the scene. Can you think an angel other than destiny?
Terminological strategies. Maybe we have to begin by making the term not. Not, that is, a terminus. Every term that stays in place puts death before you. Being is nowhere to be found, yet everywhere in finding.
These instructions follow from and allow the dissolution of destiny. Release what you see when you see it into further seeing. Release what you hear when you hear it into further hearing. Release what you think, feel, touch into further thinking, feeling, touching. All together now, release the entire field of your sentience as you sense it into further sensing, further being aware. Now hear this. Awareness precedes the release that furthers it. It is to awareness that is already there that releases. But that means awareness itself is in some pregnant sense other than in time.
Being is licit.
Everything that seems must seem to be.
Arakawa and Gen seek approximative, rigorous terms, which means they want it both ways, open and fixed. For our part, we address this profound wish for both ways with the terms axial and liminal. Axial in this connection means that the terms themselves remain non-fixed and open, even when highly specific, on the principle that the greater accuracy reflects the utter singularity of any living reality and therefore is in itself in continuous change. At the same time, we recognize that the mind moves toward fixity in the very effort to hold a truth, and yet integrity of presence allows a release of fixity. Rather than taking sides in this opposition of fixity and release, one remains at the threshold, the limen, and therefore in a liminal state in which tensions are maintained even in release. And so release is intentional. In this way, can language call beyond itself to where destiny is not yet speakable?
Gab ives, gabe, kapukluvim. Miff, tiddle, spill, piff, tis, tis, tin. Fist, kiss, piss, tis, mist. Pick a ficketis, pick a tickismick, fick a sticker, pick a flistic fizzin. Foka poka, feck stick, pock fez, duck fin. Lop peck a stong, zots, kit, fins, gabin, fins, gabin.
Everything that seems must seem to be.
Being is licit.
Language questions itself to the heart of its nature to find out if anyone is listening. Because if there is hearing, it embodies. Is language itself alive? If that her breath will mist or stain the stone, why, then she lives. Difficult question. In what state is the body when speaking these words? In what state is the body when diagramming? In what state is the body when drawing a line that leads us we know not where? Does one have to pull back from the state of self-organizing free flow in order to perform our thinking, our diagrams, our academic language, our procedures, our questions, our inquiry into non-fixity, our invocation of taboo? Does the modality in which we speak here together require any degree of suspension of immediacy or responsiveness? If so, we are not dying. Are we not dying as we speak?
Everything that seems must seem to be.
Being is licit. Are we on the right side of the law? Death is a word. Thank you, Ludwig Wittgenstein. We deal with it in a syntax. We make it an object, a verbal object. We treat it as a sign of the most dreaded event. Then we demonize it, strategize against its host of powers. And now, do we legislate against it? Difficult questions. Is death the one term terminus we fix in our unwavering aim, so embody it in law itself? Are we free of it who enforce its extinction? Can we yet axialize it? That is, free up the axis of the upright body that holds it in focus so that it has no holding power.
The thing on the field streaks the tentative grass and drops into an earth hole. Hawk hangs on an invisible axis.
No bird soars too high if he soars with his own wings. William Blake. Nota bene, no stop signs.
Anything possible to believe is an image of the truth. William Blake. Nota bene, no beliefs interdicting beliefs.
What is our view here? Let's take another word, balance. Are we pro or con? Consider the Arakawa Gen's challenge in Architecture, Sites of Reversible Destiny, to imagine ourselves falling from the Empire State Building with no terrain for a safe landing in view, and to enter that hurtling body in such a way that we have no time for the body's constituting itself a who. What remains? Landing sites registered as part of a self-registering process. Happily, we are subsequently asked to step out of the falling body before it hits ground. And now their view. It is desirable to keep the body in a state of imbalance for as long as possible. The actions, the range of actions, possible to the body for righting itself and regaining its balance will both define and reveal the body's essential nature. Here is the crux of the architectural body, radical imbalance. And what is it? There is no balance in living organisms. There is only going in and out of balance, a dynamic negotiated as a condition of being in relation to surround.
The dog put this in my head on the eve of nuts. Is a text a place to stand? Will it stand? Will it stand on my head? Will my head stand, land on a text? Will the land stand? The grandstand, and then men and women quietly gathered therein. Now they must choose. Who'd choose the rules by which those rules were chosen? The dog in your head. The dog put these words in my head. I heard dog words. I said I heard dog's words. I wend dog words. Must choose. At night, amidst a torrent of the possibles. Water coming out of a crack in a black stone. Only a trickle. But the water becomes upstanding men and women that fight against things with noble fortitude and ominous footsteps. You sit alone in your house on a sunny Monday and hear these loud-stepped persons stand against the rock that made them persons. The land that stands against can't stand for long. Soon it is a rock, a wall, a tower aloft in the mist. Upstanding ones come prize the tower. They show the beacon of their nature and bespeak the dog whereof they have that nature. There is something on which to stand, a shout of joy, a moment brief and oblivious, when all the possibilities flood the light. Yet get out of the rut, you get out of the rut or trap. Take off your muddy trousers, feel all new all over. Stop your thought in its tracks, find the bright interior. Stand in the light of the blue dog, abort the text.
Being is licit.
Everything that seems must seem to be.
Tai Chi and Alexander technique are two practices that discover that release into imbalance under force of gravity discovers a natural contrary condition of force of levity, or the tendency to further release upward, offering opportunities for radical balancing. There is no balance in living organisms. There is only a going in and out of balancing, mostly unexperienced by humans. Procedural architecture aims to produce challenging opportunities for experienced imbalance and responsive radical balancing. From the surround itself, difficult question, what ignites awareness inside oneself so challenged, such that one produces such a state of responsive reorientation, and at any given landing site, awareness awakens further? What brings us to intentional orientation at the level of immediate response to unpredictable surround? Arakawa and Gens posit the body's essential nature, as in the statement about response to severe challenge in free fall. The actions, the range of actions possible to the body for righting itself and regaining its balance will both define and reveal the body's essential nature. This faith in essential nature leads to the confidence that self-righting will produce awareness. Difficult question. What is the threshold of awareness as against the threshold of traumatizing panic? Accordingly, how to avoid panic response in which, instead of reorientation to the radically particular, the person goes into contraction, that is, contracts to a default position, i.e., basic survival, frozen life, no awareness.
Everything that seems must seem to be.
Being is licit. In Tibetan practice, hetawa, the word for intentional startle, or what G.I. Gurdjieff called conscious shock, is considered a profound opportunity for awakening to deeper reorientation. But it recognizes that there is a danger of trauma and panic. So it considers transmission of profound possibility prior to the experience to be essential. Though things happen out of the blue, one's mind is in a position to recognize that it is already in the blue. Hence, sudden awareness. The latter is what Arakawa and Gen say occurs when an event is registered as self-registering process. Difficult question. How to avoid the panic trauma response in favor of self-registering process? This is the notion of keeping the body in a state of imbalance for as long as possible. Yet what if we consider that the body is almost always in a state of imbalance, covered over by the illusion of balance, our fixed positions that make us feel secure? If that is the case, then imbalance is always already there to be discovered, anywhere. How to awaken to the view that nature equals imbalance, whereas possibility as self-registering process is an awakened state of further nature? Difficult question. Is this a matter of regaining balance or optimally of discovering conscious balancing? This is critical at the level of what we can call our view.
That ape men thought to talk, sign talk to, thought himself a man to talk to. Oh, everything that seems must seem to be.
Being is licit. Arakawa and Gens are evolving a view. It invites our participation in evolving further view. That further view would reach all the way through and beyond destiny. They call this reversible destiny. Difficult question. Might we also think that what does not simply reverse but goes further than destiny itself? Is perhaps destiny a pre-patterned and therefore arbitrary stopping point and therefore a fiction waiting to be exposed from the other side of stopping. The enemy of further view is anything that causes such stopping. So each of our rhetorical gestures must face the challenge of not stopping others from further awareness. Difficult question. Does interdiction in the legalist gesture cause stopping?
There seems to be no experience of the passing of time without an integral, generally unnoticed touch with a temporal being, dead center at the heart of the transitory. Were this not so, there would be no accumulation of transient sensations into the quasi-stable entities that, in the exaggeration of ordinary experience, we think of as objects, institutions, personal identities. In our time, it has become possible to recover the thought of being that the Eleatic thinker Parmenides opened circa 480 BC. The decision to not to die cannot be other than rooted in this, that in our being we are not beings destined to dissolve at the termination of finite temporal intervals, that we are not beings at all, but being itself, already lodged in an atemporal architecture. A landing site is an occasion for the appearance of being, and every appearance is a possible occasion for radical transformation. The direction of attention conducive to such transformation is toward the bodily, the immediate, the temporal, not away from them.
Walking there is waking here. Being is licit. What happens in a moment of awareness and falling? Perhaps it is not a moment of balance, but a still point, a suspension of time, a break into atemporality. At the still point of the turning world, neither flesh nor fleshless, neither from nor towards, at the still point, there the dance is. T.S. Eliot, Burnt Norton. When the environment, a specific eco-frame in context, seems to come into harmony, one may be experiencing not an achieved balance, but a dynamic self-balancing that spontaneously arises, self-organizing, given that things are in suspension, still point, released from time-space as controlled. Such a moment may be a radical intersection of field temporality and atemporality, a more complex liminality than occurs through mere shifts in cognitive focus. Perhaps destiny itself goes into free-forming oscillation. And if we learn to entrain to this state, perhaps further view would come to further focus, and the door on the other side of destiny swing open.